Wait for it, wait for it. Welcome to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast with your host, David Guerra.
Hallo, ich bin David Guerra und willkommen auf der 42. Folge der BerlinBrigade.com Podcast. As I said, hello, I am David Guerra and welcome to the 42nd episode of the BerlinBrigade.com Podcast. I am a former member of Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade, United States Army. And I thank you again for taking your time to join me today on this, the greatest podcast ever and exclusively dedicated to all the men and women that ever served and supported the mission of the United States Army's most illustrious and most prestigious unit, the Berlin Brigade and the Berlin Command. So without any further delay, los geht's mit diesem Podcast. Before we get started with the interview, there are a few things you should know. First, this interview was recorded live at Schneider's German Guesthouse and Beer Garden in McAllen, Texas. So that means you're going to hear a lot of background noises, people talking, plates, glasses, a festive mood. And if you ever find yourself in the McAllen, Texas area, please let me know. We'll get together at Schneider's for some great German food. I mean, it's really good stuff. And you know what? Something else. The interview itself. It was wonderful to do a face-to-face. It was the first time I did a face-to-face since, 2 years ago when I was at the German embassy for the Unification Day party event there. And that was a lot of fun. But it was also a great time to over there at Schneider's with our special guest. So, again, I look forward to the next one. So, again, if you're in the South Texas area, drop me a note. We can meet up. We'll have some German food, or you know what? If you're on the coast, we'll have some seafood. But either way, tell you what, enough talking. Enjoy the interview.
Take your seats because it's time for the special guest interview.
Hey, everybody. Joining me today, and it's Michael Kilmer. And Mike was in Berlin from October of 1960 to August of 1962 with the 592nd Signal Support Company. And he was assigned over to the Berlin Brigade Comm Center. And he was the center chief.
Trick chief on Charlie Trick.
Oh, okay. There you go. Charlie Trick. There you go. And, he's joining us today. We're having a little gathering here at the Schneider's Beer Garden Guest House. Awesome stuff. Awesome time. Awesome food. And you know what? We're going to dive in. Mike, first of all, thank you for joining us. And if you don't mind, please, you know what? Just tell us a little bit about you and what got you sent to Berlin.
Well, I joined the Army in 1969, took my basic out in Colorado, and then went to Fort Garden for Signal Corps training. I was there for 7 months before I finally got somebody to get me shipped out. And interestingly, the guy sent me to Fort Ritchie, Maryland, where the Alternate Joint Comm Center was. That's one of the original holes in the ground. That was very good duty there, and it was interesting, but I was only there during the summer. So in the fall, the guy from AG said, we got to send you somewhere. And where do you want to go? You want to go far east, or you want to go Europe? I says, Europe. And when I got the orders, I found out, that's when I found out that I was going to Berlin. And it's the most unique assignment anybody could have is to be in Berlin. And I, all my friends that I've known of all ranks seem to say that same thing. So that's how I got to Berlin, and that was October of 62. It was called Berlin Command at that time, and then a little later they changed it to Berlin Brigade. But then I was there and doing that job, working in the comm center until I left in the end of August of 62.
Pardon the interruption. I think I need to explain what's going on here. Throughout the course of the interview or the evening, we ourselves were interrupted, and it's okay. It was just the way things are, especially when you're at a restaurant. Waiters, people delivering dishes, stuff like that, people talking. And so at some couple of points, the audio got a little bit, out of control. So what I'm going to do is throughout the course of the interview here, I will interject a couple more times, just like right now, and kind of bring you up to date as to where we are in the conversation. And for this one, as we resume the interview, I had just finished asking Michael what was his impression of the wall going up and what was going on basically throughout the brigade at that time.
We knew something was going to happen. We didn't know what. And I woke up on Sunday morning and went to chapel, and the only officer in chapel was the chaplain. What's going on? Oh, they're putting up a wall down at the border here. Yeah. So, you know, bright sunshiny day, August the 13th. Something you never forget.
I can remember studying.
At this point in the conversation, I asked Michael about the situation prior to the wall actually going up. And in reference to the evacuees, refugees, those individuals that were leaving East Berlin, East Germany for the West, and in this case, West Berlin. What was going on, and what were some of their actions that they had to do during this time?
Transmit the daily report from the Marienfeld Refugee Center. And this was on the evening shift. And that whole week before they put up the wall, there were over 1,000 people reported in each day at the Marienfeld Refugee Center. And on Saturday, over 5,000. And they got up the next morning, and they started in the wee small hours. Wow. Up. Of course, the other thing we found out, intelligence found out, you know, maybe 6 months later, that they had orders if we came along and knocked down those cinder blocks, they weren't supposed to do anything. We didn't know that.
Yeah, that's... Interesting. Sorry about that noise. We can't figure out what that is because that's the second time it's played. Wow. So what was the general mood after it went up? They're on BB compound. I'm more sure things picked up and got a little bit more tighter.
Well, after a while, after things had kind of settled down, for instance, I came back with a buddy. He flew back Christmas of 61 back to Michigan. And I look at the newspaper headlines and, you look at it and you say, and they were showing the camp, and I forgot what they called it at that time, for the bivouac that they made down by the wall. Mm-hmm. And they said, oh gosh, look at this, what are you doing here? I said, hey, all my buddies are out the guards, I said, that's just the guys that are working up right near the wall. And I said, things are pretty much back to normal.
At this point in the conversation, we got a little deeper into what was going on in Berlin prior to the wall going up, and as far as it being a porous border, meaning the control points really were not there until the wall went up. And I asked him about interacting with, the other side and some of the data and intelligence gathering techniques and processes that they used. Now, we didn't go into a lot of details. He just mentioned about one individual who he suspected. And, here's how the conversation went on.
Next time I saw her, she was dating a guy from G2.
Oh, there you go.
She worked her way up.
I said, I should warn this guy. But then I said, no, he's in that business. He said, no, maybe he's playing her.
That's true. Wow.
Yeah, that was the closest I ever got to anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a lot of unusual things. Like, there was a place that might have been still there when you were there. It wasn't too far from McNair. It was called Alibaba's. A Jewish guy owned that place.
Interesting.
One day, one of my friends and I were in there, and some German guy started giving him some trouble. And I don't know what, he was bad-mouthing him or something. I don't know what it was all about. It wasn't one of my Jewish friends, I don't think. No, it was a different one. But anyway, started giving me... owner Ollie right out the door, and a German cop Schupal come up the street. Did you ever come back around this neighborhood? I'm letting you in. So yeah, that was an interesting place.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Another interesting place was just a block away from the British EM Club. A place called Stephanie. Mm-hmm. And that's what you call a true international bar. It would be mostly Germans and British soldiers,
mm-hmm.
but then there might be a few Americans and a handful of French. Everybody mixed except the French.
Of course.
Yeah, that's right.
And I said, if they want to be that way, so what?
Yeah.
But I found out one of the reasons is they didn't have any money. They had about, by the time all their money went back, they didn't get paid very much, and all their money went back to France, they had about $4 a month to live on.
Wow.
So I said, well, no wonder they're
wrong.
So my contact with the French people is usually up over the comm center line. But, hey, we had Durham Light Infantry was there when I was there. I think before that was King's Royal Light Infantry.
Mm-hmm.
Durham Light Infantry came in. Now those guys were characters. The Geordies, that's what they call themselves, Geordies, just south of the England-Scotland border.
Mm-hmm.
Very, you can understand about every other word.
Mm-hmm.
If you're their friend, you ain't paying for a round.
Mm-hmm.
That's where those guys, they are loyal to a fault, their friends.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
No, I wish I'd really like to learn into some of them guys.
Oh yeah, yeah. We had the Royal Highland Fusiliers when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
The Black Watch had just departed,
mm-hmm.
and the Devon and Dorset Regiment was mm-hmm. there. That was the last regiment before I left.
Are they younger?
We also happen to see during my time, and I forget how long it would have been. Band of the Irish Guards.
Mm.
That was the band.
Okay, at this point in the conversation, we kind of left Berlin behind for a little bit, but not for very long. I was asking Michael here at this point what he did after Berlin and what he had been doing up until, well, we got together that evening.
I retired. I worked in Crestwood. Crescent is where I spent most of my years. It was Crescent. That's where I retired from. But I, and there is no workforce office there. And they moved it to everything. But I worked in a sub-office, a spin-off, Melville. Mm-hmm. I worked at Florissant.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in University City for a month. That's when I came back from layoff. I was there, and then they immediately transferred me because some guy with more time, he wanted that location. I said, I'm just happy I'm working here.
Yeah, right. I hear you.
So how long was your hitch? How long were you in the Army for?
Just 3 years.
Oh, okay.
You know, I kind of wish I'd stayed because I would have probably been better off financially if I had stayed. Okay. Even though I wasn't getting any promotions back then. No, it was.
Still, that was cutting edge stuff for back then. That was cutting edge stuff for back then.
Hey, you know. I used to, every night at midnight, I used to talk to people like Oliver North, mm-hmm. and he'd call me sir. That was before.
Why not?
But see, that's protocol at White House Comm Center. Whoever answers the phone calls everybody sir, because they don't know who it is on the other side.
Exactly.
But I kind of like that, because sometimes, you know, General Hartell, who was the brigadier general when I was there, if he came in and he wanted to make a phone call at night, mm-hmm. rather than go to his office, he'd come down to Comm Center. So we'd have a cup of coffee when he was waiting around. But see, they had those in their office, Hartell and Watson. Watson was the two-star.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the living god, Lucius Clay, was there, came back.
That's right, yeah. He did.
Oh, hey, Berliners thought he was God.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Yeah, they gave him the Mercedes limousine when he came back. But that was smart on and I guess it was Kennedy. Kennedy was still alive. They sent him back in.
Yeah.
And he knew what he was doing, because that calmed everybody down.
Yes.
They said, man, this guy has saved our butts before.
Yeah.
He's the guy. And that calmed everybody down.
Yeah.
Not that he had any. He didn't. He was just in on. They made sure he was in on stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't make any decisions.
Wow. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yes, he did come back after the wall had gone up, kind of helped the situation.
Yeah, having him there. Well, there was one incident. I don't think I can talk about that one.
No. Even though time has expired, something we just can't talk about.
When I'm talking with other spooks or Comm Center guys, I feel free to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody else, you never know.
Unfortunately, we still maintain OPSEC here, so we've got to, and that's just the way it is.
Anyway, funny things, you know. I could give you the basic ideas. They had a new guy come in. He was there 3 days, and I'd run the morning telecom. And this new guy, he had to sweep up the telecom room. He had one set of keys, and I had the other set. We both had it in our pocket when we went home.
Mm.
And when you know, surprise telecom at night. I got one set, and I'd already given my set to the guy who was going in on midnight to make sure they were there. He disappeared. He goes to the movie. He had a really sharp... The NCOIC... was he a sergeant first class? I forget his name. But he was sharp, and he's a cool guy. that building was so old that the door to the telecom room, the hinges were on the outside. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes before the generals came to
the door was open.
Yeah.
The door was open.
Well, I got an asterisk on that, but that was it.
Hey, why not?
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean,
if you don't get one once in a while, you know you're not doing right.
Well, that's right. That's one thing I liked about that assistant OIC. He was a W-2. Mm-hmm. And talked like he was a basic training first shirt. That's the way he saw it, you know. But he's the kind of guy that, here, you don't deserve any stripes, you know.
Wow.
He backed his guys 110%. And I know there was times there that he took the heat rather than, you know, just give us an ass to it. So, I wondered what happened. CWO Normington.
Normington.
Different kind of name. But he'd been in some kind of something in World War II over Europe. I don't know if it was OSS or whatever, but something like that. And so this guy, he was something.
Do you want a coffee or another beer or a drink?
No more beer.
What?
No, this, it was very summer. It was really the hot summertime when I get into the beer, and not that often, because I used to keep my bottle of cognac behind the bar at Dress Casino. I'd walk in, Herr Ober would see me walking in, and, oh, by the way, Signal Company had a permanent reserve table.
There you go.
So walk in, by the time I get my coat hung up, back to the table, and there'd be my bottle and mixer and coke and cognac.
You were good to go.
Oh, hey, new people, that was always great. They really impressed me because, you know, the place would be jam full of people and start to get rolling. Cross the room, took some.
No one.
And,
that was it. That's all it took.
Hey, why? You must be important. Nah, I says, no, I tipped him good as that.
I've been here long enough.
Yeah, I learned to play bass. I've learned to play bass. This guy in front, this Charlie Lombardo, and he, I have not been able to find where he is, whether he's still alive or anything.
Was he any relation to Guy?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
No, he's from Patterson, New Jersey.
Oh, okay, no.
That's him right there. He was drafted out of Joey D and the Starlighters. He was a bass player for Joey D and the Starlighters when the Peppermint Twist came out.
Yep.
And, okay, this guy, he was my predecessor. He only played a couple of dance jobs for him, and he was another guy in the company. And then I, you know, because I was so enthusiastic and I was in the same room with Charlie, where I got playing rhythm guitar with him. Mm. But Charlie taught me how to play bass. And I've used that method ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And Lou, he likes to do karaoke these days. He's a crooner type. He likes that. And so, but, Saint, no, he spells his name S-A-I-N-Z. Now, I don't know whether this is something that years ago, whether they anglicized the name or what, but...
Interesting.
He's a Romano, you know. Let's face it. Anyway, this guy's another Texas boy, and there's a guy by the same name in my Legion post here in Mission,
mm-hmm.
Dave Huntley. But he's the guy that stayed on.
Okay, thank you.
This guy, we lost track of him. Lou knows, used to know him pretty good, and he's just, we've, so myself and Lou are the only ones that really are in touch anymore. Mm-hmm. But that base,
there it is.
I bought that. That's just a 30-inch scale,
mm-hmm.
and that's like a just like a LP body, mm-hmm. hollow. And that's where I learned to play on. I kept that until '69. And I traded it in a box for a string, which I still own. But I just recently had to trade bases. I had a Dean bass, 5-string bass.
Wow.
And tuners went to crap on it. It locked up the bass. I ain't gonna fool with this anymore.
Yeah.
No, I bought a Spectre. Got it home at Melhart's. And I kind of like it, but not what I'd really like to have. If I could afford it, I'd get a 5-string jazz bass.
Mm.
But that's a $1,700 instrument.
Yeah, that's a lot of gigs.
I still own this.
Oh, wow.
Had that made up. I can't get a zip anymore. I put on 10 pounds since October.
Oh, wow.
You see how skinny I was back then?
Yeah, I was about that skinny too once.
That terrible.
Yeah.
Seeing Potsdamer plots today is just, oh, God, that blows your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You remember there was nothing there during the wall time. That's at Free University. Mm-hmm. They always had really great flower beds and stuff.
Yeah.
And really colorful. That's somewhere near Tank Company.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew's chapel.
Yeah.
One of those up there is my room. That was the guy that I gave it was another troop chief that I gave the keys to. Surprising, Mr. Feldstock, that looks the same way it did.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kept that architecture on there. You know, get their RTO right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it is very good.
Well, this you can see this side of the building there because they got a fence right along the block, and this side where all the athletic fields were and the motor pool and everything, that's all housing development.
Yeah. Now, yeah.
The old 74 Strass. I don't know if that was some kind of railing or something. Probably something that really Brent was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you recognize that? Now, if you had been,
that's
around
the corner,
you've just got it. If the street
the
goes left, Willie Kent's. Willie Kent. And that's a private home now.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I can place the street. I can place the location.
You can hardly tell anymore.
Those little trees, those little shrubs are now full grown. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have some more recent pictures of that. We knew that when I made sure that I wanted to show her really kiss me.
Yeah.
We went down to took the S-Bahn down the RTO and then walked down over there to not that I remember any of the walk, but I guess because I was probably too snockered to remember. It was always at night.
Yeah, that's the problem. It was dark and we were drunk.
That I remember eating currywurst at night.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't?
Best thing to sober you up there is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Quick, too. At least enough just to get you back to the barracks.
Pardon?
At least sober enough to get you back to the barracks.
Yeah. Well, most of the time, we got our currywurst right outside the gate.
Mm-hmm.
It was popped. This old guy, middle-aged guy, that had a little currywurst place. Now, the Golden Sun, that's changed name. It's a kind of a Greek place now. Right right opposite the Andrews Gate.
Yeah.
That's still in business.
Yeah.
But I forget what they call it now. But the other places there, they're all gone. And of course, the Strassenbahn tracks are all taken up. And so it's different. It really is. But you can just enough so that you can still. Before I went back, I got on the internet and did the and got all the maps and stuff. Of course, what you want to know is, you know, for Andrews, you Hauptkadettenanstalt. That's what it really was originally was. The Kaiser's cadets, private guard. And then, I don't know, I think there are probably some of them still on the internet. Maybe you've got them on your site, some pictures of what it looked like at the end of World War II at Andrews. There were the two blocks right up beside the gate.
There were Nazi
shoulders.
Yeah, with the helmets.
Yeah. Well, they concreted all the front of that over.
Oh, so they're still there, just concrete?
Yeah, it's still under there. If you could break it apart without destroying it, it's still there. But they didn't, because that's what it was. They just made it thicker.
And, See, and I just thought they replaced it.
What?
I just thought they replaced it.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that they just put concrete over it.
Wow, interesting. You know,
I couldn't swear to it.
No, but it makes sense. Just seal it up and move along.
Oh, we had a lot of funny stuff going on during our first. You know, every character in Beetle Bailey was identified with a particular person. Lieutenant Fuzz, Command Y, was one person. Knew who Lieutenant Fuzz was. He was, well, they made him Command Radio Officer. Command Radio Officer. He was the chief of the general's chief of staff. He was his bane. This guy was not allowed to carry a sidearm. Because when he first got to Berlin, he blew a hole in the floor of the Andrews guardhouse playing quick draw in front of the mirror.
Lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, one of the other things he did was he went on a field problem wearing his orange signal scarf.
Okay.
This guy, he was by training, he was a degree in chemical engineering. Mm-hmm. So this guy was super smart. He had no common sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
It's a trade-off.
Oh, yeah, super smart guy. Beautiful wife. Oh.
So, oh, wow.
But this guy, he was, oh, man. Yeah. So they said, well, if we make him command radio officer, he can't get in too much trouble. But, oh, man. Dwight Covington. Dwight Covington was his name. And he made him command radio officer. Oh, man.
My sister was there.
They figured, well, you know, put him in that. The radio guys don't need any direction anyway. Well, you know, I mean, the convoy commander for the Autobahn was always a buck sergeant from signal command, and then have him, and then one of the other guys would have a bug strapped on his leg, and then they'd make their checks all the time for the radio room. Now, we had some other characters. We had a character. He was one of the NCOIs, NCOs in the comm center at Wise, and the NCOIC. His name was Herman Lawson. And he became known in the battalion as NATO. because one Saturday morning when they had the whole battalion had to be for training, and he had to give his talk on NATO. Well, Sergeant Lawson, he was a good guy, but he was not very smart. And his speech went like this. Gentlemen, what are NATO? NATO are composed of such countries as Germany, France, Brussels. He was David. City. He was his countries and cities and stuff. And on and on and on. And he did his best. But I mean, he kind of became the laughing stock. But his. And another thing, but his command of English wasn't too good. I got in trouble once because I took over a message he was preparing. It was supposed to go to Live Oak. Live Oak, that was the code name for SHAPE headquarters. And it was not really hot, but I mean it was operational immediate or something like that. And he had gotten this thing, and it was paper. That was back in the day when everything was punched paper tape. And he had this thing, and he had it in pieces. Oh, jeez, and I took it over. And that was my mistake. I should have left him. Because I got royal chewed out on that because it was late getting there. So I learned on that and say, oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, no. Like I said, if you're not getting chewed out, you're not doing something right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, one time. So, you know, when I first started there, they had the comm center, they had a classified section and an unclassified section. And they had Germans working in the unclassified. Yeah. They had this middle-aged German woman. She was there. She'd been around, you know, probably since the end of World War II. She'd been working for us. Stuff would come in, you know, and they'd get sent up to the other, from the classified to the unclassified section. Somebody put the wrong tape, a classified tape on the unclassified section. She gets us run off the hard copy. Fasistas secret.
Oh, yeah, I bet it did.
Needless to say, there probably wasn't anything on there that she didn't know already.
But
this is like alert. You want to know what alert was? You ask your girlfriend.
Yeah. They always knew.
Yeah. Now when it started there. Just before the wall, but definitely after the wall went up, I mean, there was all kinds of alerts that were unscheduled, you know, and that shook people coming. You know, we were kind of edgy. What's going on, you know? Or be in the comm center, and before we were told anything, you hear the tanks rolling out of Company F. You say, uh-oh, something's going on, because we wouldn't be hearing that, because you can hear blocks and blocks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, back then, they were there at Andrews, were they not?
Turner Barracks was just... Yeah. No, Turner Barracks was just across there from... You know, on the other side of Truman Plaza somewhere.
Okay, so it's always been where it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it was...
See, so I know there's no...
Nobody called it F-Troop.
Yeah. Well, at least not in public.
They had to be careful about that. Yeah. Well, Company F, you know. 40th Armor.
Yeah. Bunch of good
guys. For a few years, these guys from Tankers would wear their yellow hats and their unions. And then they quit either. I don't know why. I read somebody said, that's kind of unseemly. Let's all get together. So, but when we have a unit night, we all got orange t-shirts.
Right.
And Tom had them printed up in there, you know, showing the different designations of what signal company was at various times. Yeah, we got a couple of guys. Guys that were in the 50s, earlier 50s. And we got one guy, I forgot the guy's name, that has our guide on. He got the guide on when they broke up the company and it was no longer 592nd signal. He got the guide on and he's hanging on to it.
Wow.
So when we have a get together, he has it. So that's really nice if you have something like that where it no longer exists. Now the one thing about 6th Infantry, they're still going. They've got their own association and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know much about when they added that 502nd?
The 502nd, yes, sir. Yeah, no. Well, it's still an active regiment.
Yeah.
Still an active regiment. But I want to say that happened in the summer of 84, because by the time I got there in 85, it was already transitioned out of the 6th.
Oh, they had some nice stuff over at McNair when I was there. It was the one time, and this was after the wall was up, I think. They let a Russian tour vehicle drove in the back. North Gate? It was a North Gate one there. Yeah. Drove in the North Gate, and they let them come in, and they just stopped them, and they wouldn't let them go any further. They sat there for several hours. They are. When they went in, I think they thought they were going to make a pass to be able to see something.
Yeah. that was
kind of like about as fair play because of all the harassment.
Yeah.
Wow, geez. So many of the guys. I was glad I was a buck sergeant yesterday. Have to be that convoy commander.
Mm-hmm.
The guys would come in about 7 o'clock at night. They'd be rolling in, and they should have been there for supper, because they'd stop at this checkpoint or that checkpoint just to harass.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't as prevalent down near the end, but it would still go on.
Yeah.
It was, especially if somebody wanted something or something major international was going on.
But one thing I noticed, I said, well, hey, as long as we're dealing with Russians, this ain't going to be bad because those guys, I always said, hey, what Russia needs is to have consumer goods. These people are so hungry for stuff. You could get, for a carton of cigarettes, you might get a pair of jack boots. For a Playboy magazine, man, you can get damn near a whole uniform.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we had guys now, of course, when it started getting real prevalent, like the first sergeant said, when all you're getting that stuff, you get it, you ship it home immediately, because if we find it in the locker, it's a court martial offense.
Yeah.
But heavy brass belt buckles with a red star with a hammer and sickle on it, and the red stuff and the fur caps and stuff. Of course, the fur caps, you can find a million of them in the surplus stores now. But I mean, before those, that's what I was going to say. How come we got this crappy winter caps, you know, and Russians got this
huge fur thing going on.
Yeah. But, yeah. Those guys that ran that went on the convoys, they'd get all kinds of stuff from these Russians.
Yeah.
I mean, the Russians had come to them.
Yeah.
And so I said, you know, if Russia ever opens up, well, there's going to be a lot of business to be held.
Yeah. Sure enough. McDonald's went right in there.
Oh, yeah.
All of that's gone in there. So, yeah, definitely. It opened up and everybody went in.
Well, Russia wouldn't be too bad, but all the bad guys, you had about half and half in the KGB. Half of them were reasonable people, and the other half are crooks, you know.
Yes.
They're still there. And so they became mobsters.
Yeah, definitely. But it's, again, it proved the point. That, yeah, definitely is. You know, if it ever opened up, they were hungry for it, and sure enough, they did. They jumped on it. Wow. Okay, well, it's about that time we wrap it up, and we've been talking here with Michael Kilmer, who's in Berlin from October of 1960 to August of 1962 with the 592nd Signal Support Company. Mike, thank you very much. It's been an awesome time, wonderful conversation, great food. Nice to meet your lovely wife. Thank you for bringing her along. And, again, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to see another Berliner.
Hey, all the time. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Again, a very special thanks to Michael Kilmer, former chief of C-Trick with the 592nd Signal Support Company at the Berlin Comm Center from October 1960 to August 1962. Thanks again for a wonderful evening, and can't wait to do it again. The time has come to start wrapping up this episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. As always, I invite you to call and leave a voice message or audio comment on the BerlinBrigade.com hotline at 413-274-4233. Also, please don't forget, you can always send in your comments, concerns, questions, reunion information, and of course, podcast ideas to Dave, D-A-V-E, at BerlinBrigade.com. Again, that's Dave at BerlinBrigade.com. If you want to get your message to the right audience, this podcast and the BerlinBrigade.com website is the perfect vehicle to communicate with your audience. So don't think your reunion is too small because, well, you know what? When two or more veterans get together, it's a reunion. And that's a great cause for celebration. So, hey, you know what? Drop me a note. Again, Dave at BerlinBrigade.com or call the hotline, 413-274-4233. And before we leave, I invite you to stay up to date with the latest at BerlinBrigade.com by following us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/BerlinBrigade, all one word. Also, be sure to check out the Facebook fan page. That's the latest social media tool that is now online and in use. If you made it to this point in the podcast, I invite you to go to the fan page and link, and on the fan page link on the BerlinBrigade.com homepage, there we go, and all you just do is go down to the bottom, you'll see the little Facebook icon, and once you click there, it'll take you to that fan page, okay, and on the fan page, I invite you to post, quote, "I heard it on the podcast," end quote, and I'm going to wait a little while, and after all of these, everybody who's posted, I will randomly select one winner to win the very last of the 2012 limited edition Berlin Brigade ball caps. I had them on earlier this year, and they're gone, all but one. And that one's going to go to somebody here real soon. But I extended it. I was going to do it just last month, but now I'm going to extend it a little bit longer. So again, all you just do is go to that fan page from the link on the BerlinBrigade.com homepage and post, "I heard it on the podcast." Go take a look. You'll see a couple of others have already done it. Now, this offer is open to anyone. Remember, all you have to do is follow the Facebook fan page link from the BerlinBrigade.com homepage and post, "I heard it on the podcast," to be eligible to win. It's that simple. Lastly, I want to say merci beaucoup, spasiba, thank you, and vielen Dank to all the website visitors, and I do hope you've enjoyed your visit to Freedom's Virtual Outpost, and I invite you to come back real soon. Listen, everyone, that's it. The 42nd edition of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast has now come to an end. I am your host, David Aguirre. Again, I thank you for taking time to listen, spend with me, and I hope you enjoyed the interview with Michael Kilmer. It was a lot of fun, and again, I thank you for listening. I thank Michael for joining us and everybody. And thank you to Schneider's German Guest House for hosting us. That was a lot of fun. I called. They said, "Yeah, sure, come on over." Gave us a table, and we had a great time, as you can tell. So listen, before I close it, I continue the never-ending quest. We didn't find it yet. The the key to the clock tower. If you've got it, please, come on, let's go. We need to wind that clock. So let me know, no questions asked. If you got it, turn it over. I feel confident that, I still feel confident we're going to find it, but we haven't found it yet. So listen, until next time, Dankeschön, auf Wiedersehen, tschüss.
Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade! The BerlinBrigade.com podcast is a Dave Guerra production. Thank you.